Sunday! Every Sunday, Sci-Fi side of the microphone from the green light to the speed trap. Ray Guarino and Jody calls them as they seize them, and you better believe them. Hear relevant news, biased opinion, and outright nonsense regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gasp! With mechanical trickery never before broadcast over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrill to the explosive tension as Ray and Joe cuss each other down track. Barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disasters as they shake hands with the devil. All that and so much more at high noon this Sunday on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and the Live Feed, Ray Guarino and Joe D. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free every Sunday at noon on WHBC. Take the Hempstead Turnpike to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway sign. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass.
Which means we are live. Motormouth Radio is back on the airwaves today with your host, Ray Guarino, co-host Chris Switzer from beautiful Long Island. We are going to be speaking with our illustrious, a great guest, Mr. Matt Stone. Chris?
Very excited today. I'm doing very well, Ray. Very excited about the show we're going to have this hour. I hope everybody sits really close to the radio because Matt Stone, I mean, as much as he may not like to hear it, but he's one of my heroes.
Yeah.
And we have a really important topic to talk with him about today, which is something I think you and I, Ray, you and I can honestly consider ourselves kind of pros in the subject, but I know we're going to be learning more than we're going to be dispensing this time. I'm sure we're talking to Matt.
Absolutely. Well, first, let us introduce him. Let me introduce to the audience a warm welcome to a guest we have had on last in April 16th, 2009.
Oh, my gosh.
Matt, how are you? It's a pleasure to see you. See you this time.
Yes. Well, let's see. 2009, I'm that many years older. But other than that, good to be here, and how are you?
Excellent. And, of course, the thing that got us together this time is because I've been dealing with CarTech Books, a great entity for all of your motor type reading, and I had got a copy of this little beauty, this book titled Bullet. Wow. Which is, it got my attention right away because it's the second tagline says the cars and people behind Steve McQueen, and I said, now there's a book that I want to read because, you know, like Chris said, we kind of were like car movie and music aficionados in our own right, but we always love the story behind the story, and that's the stuff you don't get to hear or see. So then when I saw that you wrote it, I said, oh, I got to get in touch with Matt again. We have to get him on the show. So how did you get into the project? Tell us.
What sparked this thought and this idea to write this book, man?
Well, in 2018, just a couple of years ago, if you can believe that, pre-COVID and all that, there was no such thing as COVID-19 when I started this book.
I'm sure.
There was a confluence of three things. First of all, 2018 was the 50th anniversary of Bullet.
Right.
50 years, hard to believe.
Yeah.
Secondly, because as you know, within the last couple of years, the two Mustangs used to make the film came to light. They were thought lost and missing and who knows what. And it turns out one of them was in a barn owned by the family that's owned it since the 70s. And the other one was pulled out of a wrecking yard in some guy's backyard in Mexico.
Right.
So the two movie Mustangs came to ground. And then the third thing is that Ford launched a third in the series, Bullet Edition Mustang. So, you know, the comedians always say, you know, freeze. So there was the 50th anniversary of the film, the movie Mustangs coming to ground, and then the new Bullet Mustang. And to me, the triumvirate was good enough reason to really dig into this story deeper than I have in my other books and magazine articles. I really wanted to just tell the story straight, right, as you can imagine, with this guy, with these cars and this film. There is a tornado of urban legend and BS that has surrounded Bullitt and Steve McQueen in these cars since 1968.
Yeah, and I'm hoping we can put some of that BS to rest and get to the straight facts. That's something that we're really looking forward to here.
Yeah, I wanted to do some real old school reporting and do some myth busting. And fortunately, with the support of the family, Chad McQueen and Steve's first wife, Neil, they said, yeah, we're tired of it. They've heard all the crap for 50 years. And they said, Maddie, just do it right. Just find out everything you can and set it straight.
Tell me straight. They called you Maddie. Yeah. They really did. They can get away with it, right?
Oh, sure. It's funny because Chad has kind of a gravelly voice. He's Maddie. It's kind of funny. And they've been nothing but great supporters and gave me photos and connections and phone numbers and names and, you know, everything you need to dig up as many people and things as I could possibly dig up. Yeah. And I did. And it was for a writer and an enthusiast, it was truly like following the yellow brick road. And it was just great fun. Went to San Francisco and visited all the locations and met with people. And my other huge goal was to find photos that people hadn't seen. Because so many, as you guys know, any books that reference Bullitt or magazine article, they run some selection of the same 20 photos we've all seen for 50 years. And my goal is like, okay, there's got to be more movie stills and there's got to be more stuff. Yeah, you like that one right there?
Yeah.
Like that one.
I mean, I'm holding up the book, but people should know. You have to go to Carthage. You have to buy this book and see for yourself. It's
yes.
Yeah.
That's a good picture.
Yeah.
That actually, funny you should show that one, right? Because that is one of my personal favorite photos in that book. And if you look at it closely in the bottom, there's one Mustang and there's two Frank Bullitt.
There's two Bullitts. That's right.
Steve McQueen on the right-hand side. And on the left-hand side, wearing the costume, is also Bud Eakins, who was his driver stunt double. So we had one car and two Franks in that one photo. Plus, if you look back in the bay, I mean, there's so much going on in that photo, and it's so deep. The McQueen family gave me that shot, and I think it's one of my very favorite in the entire book.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. We're going to try and post that shot on Motormouth Radio if it's possible, Matt, with your permission.
As long as it's in context of the book and the project, it's fine. Sure. Yeah.
Thank you.
Right.
No. But that to me is there are so many myths. Like just one offhand that I'd like to throw out to you just to get this started. I remember being told that they filled the tires of the cars of the Charger and the Mustang, filled them with water to keep them on the ground. And I'm wondering, is that myth busted or is that a myth or is that the truth?
It wasn't in the book.
Honestly, I have never heard that.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was a myth. Never heard that. It may be a myth and it may be true. But I do not know. I've never heard it. And if I'd heard it, I would have addressed it.
Right.
But I'm not aware.
Okay.
You stumped me already.
I said, I always say legend has it because I'm no pro. I just hear the stories. I'm just the messenger here. I just hear the stories and go, wow, that's pretty groovy. And that's it.
I'm thinking like, you know, unlike one of the recreations they did back in the day, those are bias ply tires with tubes. Any air gap around that water is going to make a real bad imbalance in the way that tire rolls.
Right,
so
right.
I think
these
guys are looking for air.
Okay, so, just wondering.
The first thing that I learned, which it was very early on in the book, which is such a key point to the whole thing, which you know I never knew, that the movie was based on the book titled Mute Witness.
Yep.
By Robert Fish. I never knew that. I never knew that it was based on a movie. So. Yeah, I mean, there's so many facts crammed into this book. Sorry about yours, Chris. It's you know.
I know
we have a lot of numbers guys, a lot of numbers crunchers, facts figures guys that listen to the show. And as Matt had mentioned, the two cars that are now revived and known about are known as the 558 and 559 car, which are the last three digits of those VINs. And again, I love the way that was all recreated and shown in the book, painstakingly, how those cars, you know, they're basically, they're documented. And I mean, I don't know, maybe now's a good time to get into it. The other thing that's kind of the other myth in the room is the Chargers. You know, there were,
I was going to ask, yeah.
It was a four myth car, which has been Matt debunked, but there were at least two Chargers, and they haven't been found. Those cars are not anywhere to be heard of. So,
well, we know what happened to one of them.
Right.
Yeah, one of them was very, very handily blown up in the ultimate scene of the chase. And at the gas station, et cetera. So we know one of them had a fiery end. The other one, nada. Not one expert that I can find, including a guy named Galen Govier, who is the master of all, as you guys are Chrysler guys, the master of all Chrysler build records, option numbers, VIN tags, yes, et cetera, et cetera. Galen says, I don't know. I think part of the reason for that is that those cars, both of those Dodges, were bought by the studio at a Dodge dealer in Van Nuys, California. I mean, they were not acquired through some studio backdoor deal kind of thing. They went to a Dodge dealer and bought them.
Right.
And, you know, it just didn't matter to anybody at that point what the window stickers and VINs were. And they were just, they were tools to be used up, and one ostensibly survived and one certainly did not. And nobody credible has ever said, oh yeah, I've got the black car, I've got the remaining car, and here's the serial number, and here's the paperwork from Warner Brothers.
Right.
Nada. I am hoping that this book, getting out into the greater bullet sphere, will bring that car to light, because that would be the last holy grail from the movie.
Right,
because we know about the Mustangs now, and finding that Charger and being able to authenticate and document that it's really the movie car would just tie it up in a very neat little bow. And I would love for that to happen. I hope someday, 6 months from now, somebody emails me or calls me and says, "Yeah, I got that black Charger."
Yeah.
Oh, really? Where?
Yeah, it's funny because as I was talk to Chris about it all the time, I watch YouTube as a form of TV now, and I just in my feed popped up a video last night. There's a lot of movie stuff I watch, and there was some bullet clips. So they had isolated a 5 minute, you know, that end scene with the gas station. So of course I've only seen it 1,000 times. What's 1,001? So I watch it, and now, you know, of course, after reading the book and after reading the great article that was in Hagerty magazine about the 559 car, you see it with a different eye. And as I'm looking at the cars, I'm remembering everything I read in the book about the blacked out trim and, you know, how the Mustang was all blacked out. And then, you know, McQueen bangs the Charger a few times and there's the blue paint visible under the black paint. I'm like, yes, you know, you don't see that when you're casually watching this thing. It's like, okay, it's all the stuff that comes to light. So,
well, what is the blue paint?
The car was blue.
Which car?
One of the two cars was blue.
Charger.
The Charger. The one that went into the gas station, we believe, was blue.
Yeah. It's like a B5 blue.
Yeah, kind of B5 bluey. And, of course, it was quickly painted over black.
Right.
And it was an automatic.
Right.
Of course, the one that Hickman drives in the chase is a 4-speed, because you can see the pistol grip a couple of times.
Right,
Bill Hickman.
But the beater car, the blower upper car, was actually blue. Yeah. And a friend of mine who is mentioned in the dedication, named Anthony Bologna, nice
Irish fellow.
Yeah, right.
Nice Jewish Italian boy from North Beach, San Francisco. Right. He was a kid. He was a teenager at the time, and he went. He was walking from somewhere to somewhere, ostensibly school to home. And, of course, they were all muscle car-loving kids at the time, like we all were. And he sees this blue Charger, has no idea what it is. He's sitting parked on the street. He walks over and looks at it. And some handler came out and said, "What are you doing?" You know, he says, "Oh, I'm just looking at this really cool car." And the guy said to Anthony, oh, you can sit in it if you like, but don't touch anything. Of course, he sat in and touched everything. Yeah. opened the hood, looked underneath it, and he says, you could see the blue and the black paint. And he says, there was no question that car was blue, and it was an automatic train.
Oh, right. Wow. That is amazing. How many people did you interview, Matt, for something like this? I mean, we're talking about 50 years here. Were there a steady source of eyewitnesses or people in the know for this book?
Some. I wouldn't say it was steady, but there were sources, because some of this I had actually kind of worked on some time ago. I was lucky enough to talk to Robert Vaughn before he passed away.
Wow.
And gave me some quotes, which are in the book. And let's see, who Don Gordon, who plays Del Getty,
right,
the other cop, his
right,
partner, and talked to him. He and I sat next to each other at a screening one time.
Oh, wow.
And he just told me all kinds of stories about the movie and Steve and the whole deal. And then other people that are still around that in one way or another, you know, had involvement or experience with it. And the only guy I am disappointed I did not reach out to, who's very much around, is Robert Duvall, who played the taxi driver.
Yes.
That carted Bullet around town. And I really wish I would have reached out to him, and I didn't, and that's my bad, and I apologize now. And in the reprint, I'll fix it.
I was going to say, in the next version, yes, part two.
Next edition, yeah, Bullet 3 or Bullet 7 or whatever it will be, I will talk to Robert Duvall. But, you know, there's a fair number of people around, although, you know, too many of the cast is no longer with us, and that's unfortunate. But I was lucky enough to get to Robert Vaughn and Don Gordon and Steve's wife Neil was on the set several times, and she had some interesting memories about stuff that they did and didn't do and what Steve, how he looked at the movie and all that. Unfortunately, the director Peter Yates is gone, and stuntman and coordinator Kerry Lofton is gone. I mean, too many of the key players are not with us, but I interviewed Bud Eakins before he passed away. Bud Eakins if you remember Taylor Street, when they're bouncing down the street, Bud Eakins drove those scenes. And he told me a lot of good stuff. And fortunately confirmed how much of the stunt driving Steve actually did, which is a lot more than some people suspect. But he drove a lot of that movie.
Yeah, and I have to say, I it's a well-known fact. That movie, and that I found out now it was by design. Every time I watched it, of course, early on, you know, my stomach would rise and fall with that scene, and it still does. And then I read in the book that it was actually kind of, you know, guys like Lofton and Friedkin, Bill Hickman, of course, they wanted that effect. They wanted you to feel that as a result. And then, boy, it sure did stand the test of time. But let me take a second and reestablish and say you're listening to Mr. Matt Stone, author of the book titled Bullet, with Ray Guarino, Chris Switzer on Motormouth Radio. And you should follow us on social media. You can find links to this. We'll put links to the book up on our social media sites. We're on, of course, the website and Twitter and Facebook is Motormouth Radio. And Instagram is real_Motormouth Radio. And as a rare treat, we're opening the phone lines if people would like to call and speak with Matt. And that number is 516-256-9510. Matt, you don't know what you may be in for now. We've unleashed the phone, so give us a call and talk to us about it.
Matt, what was the kind of modifications they did to these cars so they can withstand that San Francisco punishment? What was some of the things that they did?
Relatively straightforward. For example, on the Mustang, they put, and I think maybe on the Charger, they put Koni shocks, Koni adjustable shocks, and did some reinforcing at the shock towers, you know, to handle that banging all the time.
Sure.
And of course, they on the Mustangs, they blacked out the trim. They took off all the lettering, all the stripes, all that stuff. They wanted a little saltier look, which they got. I think with the semi-dull paint and without the chrome horsey and the grill and all that. With if you remember the GT390 Mustangs, they had.
Matt, can I stop you for a second?
Yeah,
I just want to pick
sure
up the phone.
Can.
We have
to pick up the phone.
In. Yeah.
Let's go to the phones, go to the fun, and say hi, you're on with the Motormouths and Matt Stone.
Hey, guys, what's happening?
Hi, Vic.
Hey, Vic, what's going on, my brother?
Nothing much. How about you? You said that that they were tube tires. They were tubeless tires back then. They're probably ERF 7014s. So
we got the tire size.
What makes? Because I
looked at three tire stores.
So. Okay. Yes.
That's
probably, like I said, probably a tubeless tire. And also, if you filled that tire with water, you would have snapped the axles.
Oh, okay.
Because you're trying to dead hook a car now.
Got it. So. Okay.
Good point, Vic.
Thank you. Yeah. No, it's like I said, I don't get any news first.
Right.
So it's, no. But I do remember the elaborate
stuff.
Yeah,
I had listened to an interview a while back. I forget who it was, and Steve McQueen walked into his shop and wanted to use something other than a Mustang. That was his second choice. Mm-hmm. And I forget who it was.
Yeah,
about a year or two ago.
Yeah, I think we touched on it recently, I remember, and it was one of those urban lores that we were going to probably spring on to Matt later on in the show. Thank you for preparing him early.
Right.
Okay, yeah. And also, I'm sure you guys may know this, but if you look at the film when they're going through the streets, you can see the rubber marks where they had done the run-through before so that the driver knows where to hit his marks.
Yeah.
You know, our buddy Bill was just commenting on that and saying how you didn't see a lot of witness marks in the street. You know, I guess attesting to the point you were looking at pros with, you know, well-prepared cars.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yep.
Awesome, Vic. Well, thank you so much.
It. I'm shot for the day.
Okay. We're going to let you
bye,
go.
Bye.
Be safe. We'll talk to you soon.
To finish answering your question real quickly, Chris.
Yeah.
You know, they generally withstood all the pounding and banging pretty well.
Right.
But not without incident. So Max Balchowski, the racer and car builder who modified those cars, had set up a little impromptu kind of a pop-up emergency triage garage there in San Francisco in a really handsome underground parking garage at 450 Sutter Street in San Francisco, which you can still drive in and walk in. Yeah.
Can we stop you one more time? We got another call. Got the phones on fire. Hi, you're on with the Motormouths and Matt Stone, the author of Bullet.
Chris Ray and Matt Stone.
Hey, Bob.
What's up, Bob?
Matt Stone, that's like a great name for an author of a book.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's great.
I always
and renowned author, Matt Stone.
Yes, it's also a good overnight rock and roll disc jockey.
Yeah.
Okay.
Matt Stone with you playing the top 40, playing your tunes.
So Bob, I know you have
another great.
You have to have some Bullet memories and thoughts. I know you do.
Yes.
Yeah, you know I do, and I tell you, just listening to this great radio program, I'm telling you, just it's the interest is great. A couple of friends have 68, you know. Mm-hmm. They were always quick, you know, the 390s. They really had some legs.
Sure.
So my question to Matt was, what was the most enlightening fact that he found? I'm going to keep this relatively short. Mm-hmm. You can share that with us. It's like, what really, really hit him? And lastly, what is his current Mustang build? What is he doing? What is he driving?
Mm-hmm. Oh, all righty.
Interesting.
Those are my two questions.
Okay.
And I'll listen to you guys on the program.
Thanks, Bob.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for the call.
Thanks for the call. Okay.
Thanks, Matt Stone.
Take care. That's my name.
Okay.
Okay. So good questions, both of them.
What was the most enlightening?
Struck me.
I mean, that's a tough one.
Yeah. One thing I will tell you that's an interesting factoid, that a lot of people do not know, is originally, instead of the gas station, Steve and the director wanted the chase scene to end with the bad guy flying off the Golden Gate Bridge.
Right. Oh, they mentioned the bridge in the book a few times. You mentioned.
And although the city was very accommodating, they said no, not doing
yeah.
that.
Yeah, no.
That's a little too strange, a little too risky, a little too everything.
Right.
So that's when they went up to Guadalupe Canyon and built the phony gas station and blew it up.
Right.
But I was always wondering, well, why didn't the chase at least cross the Golden Gate Bridge? That would have been fun. You know, shot from a chopper or something. But
yeah.
But they wanted to end it there with the bad guys going into the drink off the bridge. And the city said, that's one step too far, so we're not doing that.
Yeah.
Well, my current Mustang is a 2008 Shelby GT convertible.
Nice.
Yeah, that's my old guy cruiser muscle car. put the top down, and sometimes my wife lets me drive it, and it's fun.
I recently, just to divert a little, within the last year, got to put a set of aftermarket, Ford Motorsports cams in a 2005 GT, and I will tell you, if you want to wake up that car, woo-hoo, wow, nice. That with some Borla exhaust and retune on the computer, the car becomes a beast and easy to do. Not very hard at all. Do it in an afternoon.
So before we got the call, you were saying about the modifications on the two cars, Matt. That you were saying there was a shop that they had both cars to.
The cars were modified. Max Balchowski and his wife built a series of sports cars called Old Yeller.
Uh-huh.
And they were junkyard dogs. I mean, they just, the Buick engines and Ford frames and home-built fenders and body panels, but they were fast and really ran. And Max beat Ferraris and Maseratis and all kinds of stuff on the road racing tracks of Southern California. He had a shop in Hollywood, not far from where McQueen lived, and they knew each other. Because McQueen was SCCA Racing at the time, and he recognized what a great builder and fabricator Max Balchowski was, so he took the cars there, and they did all kinds of little trick stuff. They did the exhaust systems. If you remember, on a 68 Mustang GT, there were little glass neck mufflers under the floorboard, and in the back there was that big transverse muffler,
mm-hmm.
and then the dual pipes out the back.
Right.
They just pulled out the transverse muffler so the cars would be louder. And the little glass packs underneath there are about that long. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's so loud.
And you can hear them bark. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I also got, it's actually on page 38 of the book, and one of my notes that I wrote was that Max of Hollywood Motors, he prepped the Mustangs and Chargers with reinforced shock towers, like you'd said, re-arced leaf springs, Coney shocks, as you mentioned. And the Charger got stronger torsion bars and steering arms and also milled heads, which is kind of cool because now that's the thing. You know, in the book, you mentioned that the Charger, right, being a 440 car, it was an RT, had more power than the 390 Mustang.
Sure.
So they were really unmatched performance-wise. And then with, you put all the camera rigging on those cars, how many pounds is that in? It's got to be, you know, back in the, I mean, it's not like GoPros. You know, that had to be hundreds of pounds of weight. So there was.
I am going to guess, Ray, that between, you know, an onboard generator and all that steel rigging,
right,
and the sound gear and cameras, I would bet you that either one of those cars could have weighed 5,000 pounds.
Sure.
Wow.
Fully rigged.
Right. I forgot about it. There's a picture in the book of the car with the generator, a gas generator on the back of it. You know, again, to power the cameras, you need electricity for those cameras. It's,
sure.
We didn't have lithium ion batteries back then, you know. You know, that's the thing I talk about, like with my kids and younger people I know. It's like how things have changed. you know, now we take it for granted. Everything fits in your pocket and it's small size and it lasts for days. Back then, you know, phones had to be dialed. You needed transformers, relays, big, you know, you needed AC power for everything, you know, and they made it work. And the fact that they can make a movie like that and hide everything was pretty phenomenal. The guys were good. Yeah.
They were very good.
Yeah.
In terms of cinematography and the rigging and the filming and the sound, I mean, they were talented people.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I tell you, we have to stretch our talent a little bit right now. We're going to take a bottom of an hour of the hour break, Matt, so we can take care of some sponsorship stuff. We'll play a couple spots, reestablish, and we'll come back with more of Matt Stone and the Bullet Book, the cars and people behind Steve McQueen. But first, Chris, do we have an honor group of the hour today?
Of course we do, Ray. The Motormouth Radio honor group of the hour this week. If you don't trust your dashboard instrumentation, does that flickering idiot light mean nothing? Do you scoff at that blaring check engine light? Does the wandering gas gauge leave you unfazed? Well, if you're one of those drivers that relies more on their automotive prowess, their automotive intuition, than the real-time reports coming directly from their dash. If you rely more on the seat of your pants, you're part of the Motormouth Radio Wanda Group of the Hour. There you go.
Excellent. I can tell you've been spending some time in your own car. So
you bet I have.
Yeah. All right. We'll take our bottom of the hour break right now. We got a couple of minutes, and then we'll be back with more Ray Guarino, Chris Switzer, and more importantly, Matt Stone, author of Bullet. And we'll be taking your phone calls at 516-256-9510. Keep it where you got it on Motormouth Radio, 90.3 WHPC.
Shake off the realities of the day, broaden your musical horizons, and embrace the diversity every Monday afternoon at 5 for 2 hours of Revelations. The show offers a potently unique collection of music with an emphasis on themes and rock rarities, an occasional tour de force of blues and soul mixed with compelling sets of folk and folk rock. I'm Steve Kay, and I've got the perfect soundtrack for your drive home every Monday afternoon at 5. On Revelations, right here on the voice of Nassau Community College, 90.3 WHPC.
This show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Lynbrook and Oceanside, who remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose which shop you want to have your car fixed at. CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with a rental car arrangement if needed. And yes, se habla español. More information is available by calling 516-593-0920 or visiting online at celebritychasecollision.com.
All right, we're back with Motormouth Radio, Long Island's only automotive talk show, dedicated to all things automotive, motorcycle, machining. We've talked about ceiling fans and washers and dryers, too. But today, we're talking with Mr. Matt Stone, the author of Bullet, the cars and people behind Steve McQueen. And you can get in on this if you want to call at 516-256-9510. So,
and we got a call before we jump in. Let's jump on the phones, jump on the fun. Say, hi, you're on with the Motormouths and Matt Stone.
Hello, Matt Stone and Motormouth. I'm so excited to be with you today.
Hey, Tom.
Many reasons.
Talk to us,
and
Tom.
And guess what?
What?
Guess what, guys? I proudly wear the badge that I am part of your honor group of the hour. Lights and gauges mean nothing to me.
Nice.
It's good to know, Tom. You rely on the seat of your pants just like I do. I'm glad to hear that.
And you know what? People that sell rebuilt engines love you guys.
Yeah. Right.
And I want you all to know, sometimes I don't even wear pants, just so you know.
Boom.
But anyway. Right. Anyway.
Thanks. Now we have that picture in our mind now. Thanks, Tom.
All right. Matt Stone, sir. where can I buy your book, number one? And two, besides buying your book, I'm going to go to my library and ask them to bring it in. So can you expand on that, please, sir?
And Matt, let me add to what Tom asked, because one of our callers, listeners, Al, had asked how he could get an autographed copy of your book, which I may like to have mine autographed as well.
Oh, holy moly. Look, Matt's thinking.
Well, the first couple are easy. They can buy, anybody can buy the book publisher direct from cartechbooks.com. You can also get it, Amazon carries it. And another favorite of mine, as you guys are probably know, is Auto Books and Arrow Books Bookstore out here in Burbank, California. And they ship anywhere in the country. And actually, that's the best way to get an autographed copy, is if you buy it through Auto Books, Arrow Books in Burbank, California, and you deal with Tina, who is the owner of the bookstore, and say that you want your book autographed, personalized, whatever. I stop by there once a week and sit and sign stuff. And that's the way to do the autograph.
That's homely.
I don't sell them. I'm not in charge of distribution or sales. So I don't inventory or sell books out of my office there. But Auto Books, Arrow Books, Auto Books - Arrow Books in Burbank, California. Their website is exactly that. I think it's autobooks-arrowbooks.com. And they will arrange for a personalized or autographed copy as anybody wishes.
Nice.
And that's probably the best way if you want to do the autograph thing, because I'm there once a week and I sign stuff.
That's amazing, good, man. What a wonderful way of doing it.
Thank you. Thank you. And Motormouth, guys, if you could put that link up, I couldn't write it down. If you could put that link somewhere or put it on InstaWeb or something.
We will talk to our internet know-it-all.
And
how's Joe D? How's Joe D?
Joe's fine, Tom. He's doing excellent.
Yes.
Please send him my best. I really care about that guy. He's a great guy.
Do you have him on sometime? Yes. We'll be touching on that more in the future. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you for the call. We'll talk to you soon.
Have a great day, guys. Thanks for what you do.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
I was also going to say, because people ask me this question, unlike baseball players and certain baseball players and NFL stars and whatever, I do not charge for autographs. I think that's absolutely insulting. I mean, if you're going to reach into your metaphoric or actual wallet and buy my book, I'm not going to charge you $20 to sign my name.
Mm-hmm.
For goodness sake. I think that's absolutely insulting, and I don't. I will write it to you and your friend and your dog and whatever, and have a great time and enjoy the ride, and you get my unreadable signature, and it don't cost no extra.
Right. That's great.
In the words of John Belushi, don't cost nothing.
Yeah.
Don't cost nothing. Exactly. And that is really a great way of looking at it, Matt, because, people are going to step out of their way and purchase your book. And that alone is flattering in itself. And the subject matter of Bullet, the Cars and People Behind Steve McQueen is fascinating. We all have such a hunger for this. For knowing what went on and to do something so unique where you're actually not only talking about the movie, you're talking about the star, the people behind it, and that extraordinary 8-minute chase, which we all have grown up with is just fantastic.
You know what, Chris? I have two other points that I picked out of the book that you may be interested in that I found phenomenally interesting. First one was that a C3 Corvette was modified as a camera car to keep up with these guys. And they stripped the body off it. I mean, like a go-kart. And they just named it the Chevy.
Chevy.
Oh,
it was the Chevy.
The Chevy. But more interesting than that, I mean, that's interesting to us car geeks who love all that crazy stuff. The other thing that everybody watched the movie knows, which you might think was scripted, which wasn't, was that reverse burnout that McQueen did when he missed the turn. onto Chestnut Street. It wasn't planned, but it was so good. Actually, McQueen said, look, I think we should leave that in. And he had a lot, he held a lot of sway, you know, on that set. And they did leave it in. And I'm so glad they did, because that's iconic. You know, it's,
oh yeah,
that scene alone is, it's fantastic.
You got a full shot of his face. You got the car, you know, tracking rubber and blown smoke. It's perfect. It's a,
no,
perfect,
yeah, no doubt he was driving, you know, not at all.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I think the other point too, guys, is look how completely poised he was.
Yeah.
He blew the turn, and instead of swearing and whatever, he just like very calmly got reversed.
Jammed it in reverse,
burned backwards, hit first, straightened up, and burned up the street.
Kind of like what we would do if we were being chased by the cops, you know?
It's of course! Just as smooth as glass. Mm-hmm. He didn't flinch, and he just did it. And I thought that was commendable. That tells you what a great driver he really was.
But you know what? That's the funny thing about the whole entire... His place in the whole entire movie. There are scenes that I completely love, and they are so ordinary. Just when he takes the little heater, that handheld heater, and he drops it in his cup of coffee in the morning. The scene I love is when he goes into the corner food store, and he says hello to the owner of the store, and goes over and picks up six TV dinners, like bap, 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 bap. Now he's got six of them in his hand. There's his week. Exactly. He walks out with them. Or the best part, and this is something that Matt, you and I can understand this, is the way he combs his hair. He takes his hands and just goes, beep, 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 beep. That, I can do that now. I can do that now.
Well, Chris.
Yeah, me too.
The TV dinner thing hit with you because you lived as a bachelor for years. So you, that's how you shopped.
Totally. Where do you think I got it from? That man was cool every step through that movie. And if you ask me personally, that was his cool personification, right? If that's the right word for it, that was him. You just put him on the cool pedestal right at that point.
Yeah.
Right at that point.
Or the other one is when he walks outside the market and wants a newspaper.
Right.
Fishes around and doesn't have a quarter. So he goes up to the machine and bangs the top of the paper dispenser. Of course, who remembers those now?
Right.
Right.
And steals a paper. This is a cop.
Right.
Well, and he steals a paper.
He was entitled. You know, speaking of that, of guys of our age, the fact that he had to have Robert Duvall drive him around and stop at payphones to call in, you know, to check in and get information. And then that, you know, that there was a name for it. The machine they had in the police precinct that actually, it was the dot matrix printer that would come up with the picture, you know, the faxophone or whatever it was.
Yes.
The phone receiver was up on the modem, the old original style. Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, they showcased that.
And they're looking at it like it was, you know, Star Wars. Like, we're going to get a picture at any minute. It's going to be high resolution. Like,
yeah. We're going to read what's on the paper.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. You know, we can nitpick that now. Of course, it's 50 years later. But, you know, that's the beauty of it. I watch a lot of old TV. And I watch it because I like to look back. You know, and then I get to use that as good talking points at dinner for how far we've come forward, you know. I mean, yes. You carry a cell phone now that has it's really a computer. It does everything and more. It's more like Star Trek than, you know, than a phone. Mm-hmm. But the fact that a movie like this can still last and still endure and still have conversations and books written about it says a lot about the genre and the, you know, the lasting ability of that.
So equally, true. I mean, because of that, and to your point, right, the times. 1968, I mean, this was, you know, yeah. Vietnam and protesting and hippies and all that. And you look at the clothing, the hairstyles, the cars, the buildings, the phone and the quip machine and all that stuff. That just takes you back to that time instantly.
Yes,
and
it does.
And with any old movie, just that fabric that plays behind and across any old film, the cultural imperatives and the street scenes and the other cars parked on the street and the clothing and the sayings and some of the lingo that they used. And I mean, you know, it was 1968 and there was no doubt about that.
Hey, desert boots. McQueen wore desert boots. I wore them back in the day. Some people call them chukka boots. I think depends on what part of the country you were in. Yeah. You know, something we talked about, I think it was last week, Chris, something that I posted on social media months ago. Again, I said I watch a lot of old TV, and I had noticed on Emergency, I took a picture from a rooftop view looking down at the street, and I posted it and said, what's different today about a scene like this? Every parking spot had a grease stain in it, you know, and every road had a center stripe of grease, and it was clearly visible on the TV shows and the movies. We lost that, and we realized that, hey, that's a good thing. You know, our cars don't leak. We don't have road draft tubes anymore, and they just don't spew oil like they used to. It's a good thing.
Yeah, it's true. Technology does have its benefits. But Matt,
that is unless you ignore the gauges.
Right.
Then it could happen.
Right.
But Matt, we want to
Al just ordered an autographed copy of your book. That's excellent.
Awesome. I wanted to get into that. There was another urban legend where the Mustang was not the first choice. Is that part of your description in the book at all? That there was a different car, or was there a different car?
To my knowledge, no. I have heard that rumor, but. But in a long conversation with Chad McQueen, he said, you know, my dad knew exactly what he wanted.
Okay.
He picked those cars. He wanted them to look, you know, cool and just a little salty and like something that a guy on a detective salary could afford.
Right.
That's why it wasn't a Shelby or something, you know, much more exotic.
Right.
But he says it had to be something that a San Francisco cop could afford at the time. And wanted it to look a little unique, a little salty. And again, like something that Frank Bullitt would not only drive, but could afford. So we talked about other cars, and he said, no, that's pretty much what he wanted the whole way. Now, I have heard that rumor, but at least according to that one source named McQueen.
good source.
I'm not buying that there was anything else that was a particularly strong contender. Right. I mean, there may have been a couple of other things batted around, but right. But I don't think there was anything that was ostensibly ahead of the Mustang as a choice.
You know, interesting too, when I watched that clip, the last clip of the gas station, and he's dueling with the Charger and he's banging it, you know, and then you get the thug with the shotgun that peppers the windshield. I'm thinking, it's his car, you know, this is his own personal car, and he's ramming it into this Charger. I'm like, all right, there's a fender. But now the guy starts shooting at you. Got to be thinking, detective or not, bad guy or not, like, hey, who's gonna fix my car? Like, this is my Mustang. I'm still paying it off.
That's why later in the movie, when they have to go to the murder scene, Jacqueline Bissett drives her Porsche convertible. Right, or he drives it.
Yes,
but they're in it together because, of course, the Mustang is gone.
Right. Oh, yeah. When he hit the ditch and the front wheel just hung, I've worked on those front ends. They are not particularly robust by any means.
That's for sure.
And boy, you know, right after he hit the Charger, well, when it jettisoned, of course, we weren't supposed to know that, but it was linked. The cars were linked at that point. Right. And there was even some controversy about that. There was a little problem with that. It was a late launch. But, you know, McQueen goes over the divider, over the highway divider, and across three of the lanes of traffic, spins out and hits the ditch. So that car was thoroughly trashed at that point.
No, that's for sure. Matt, was there something in your research that made you even go, wow? What was there anything that made you actually stand back and go, holy smokes, I didn't know that?
There were several small wows, but I don't know that there was a big, giant epiphany. Okay. But lots of little small wows, like, oh, that's cool or interesting. So that's how they did that.
Got it.
A lot of, and I tried to put those in the book so hopefully other people, the readers, would get that same feeling. Like, oh, that's what happened, or that's how they did that, or that's who this was, or whatever.
I like it.
No major crazy epiphanies.
Yeah,
lots of little ones.
You did touch on the elephant in the room that the people who don't even know pick up on, and that's the green VW bug. Well, there's that in Le Mans that you just see it.
You
everywhere.
Mean the six of them.
and the lost hubcaps on the Charger. Like, how many hubcaps did that car lose?
How many times did the car shift? Well, how many times did Steve McQueen shift?
Right. But they had a 10-speed transmission.
Right. Yeah, exactly. He's in ninth gear.
But it sounded cool.
Yeah. He's chirping the wheels at 70 miles an hour.
On dirt. Yeah, that was
on dirt.
You know, but that's all the cinematography stuff. Of course, you know, every shootout, every Western shootout, there's ricochets, and they're hitting, like, you know, they're hitting cactus trees and fences, but yet there's a metallic ricochet. We've come to expect that, I guess.
The funny thing is, this was the first one, really. You can honestly say that this was the first chase scene that made it to this high level of...
Without a doubt.
So, and the funny thing was, and Matt, I'm sure you can attest to this, and probably it will be your next book, I would assume, is that this chase scene led to the 7-Ups and the French Connection. The French Connection doing... They all wanted to top each other.
Same guys.
Right? Huh?
Same guys.
They all wanted to top each other.
Bill
Hickman. Matt's got a call. Matt's taking a call.
You need a driver, you get Bill Hickman, right?
You're right. I mean... Like, Matt, you talked about doing an overhead shot of the Bay Bridge. And meanwhile, Sonny Grosso did it in the 7-Ups on the George Washington Bridge with two Pontiacs.
Right.
So it's like that conversation must have led to that chasing. Let's do that thing that Kerry Lofkin wanted to do. Those are the things that, to me, are like so fascinating. How one scene leads to another. So when you look at the bullet chase,
well, you think about it, guys. I mean, that was a very small community of guys that could pull that stuff off.
Right. Oh yeah,
you know, there weren't a lot of guys that could coordinate stunts and drive like Kerry Lofton,
right?
Or Bill Hickman, for that matter.
Right.
I mean, that community of folks that could do those chase scenes and crazy stuff like that was a very small Hollywood network of dudes.
Or Steve McQueen.
Steve McQueen. And they talk to each other, I'm sure. And again, that's why, you know, Kerry did so many movies and Hickman drove so many movies, because those were the guys that did that stuff.
Right.
I mean, if you look at it, Chris, you know, in the 7-Ups and in any other movies like that, Grosso, they didn't get to drive a car off the GW bridge either.
Right.
They might have wanted to, but they didn't. So they found a truck up on 684 or whatever it was, you know, or on the hutch and
right.
That poor Ventura, you know, it's.
Matt, was there any discussion or pre-discussion in your book that talks about how these men crafted this chase scene at all?
Carefully. But yeah, some of it was very planned.
You know? Oh, okay.
And sometimes, you know, they 15 minutes before they were going to go shoot it, they chalked it out on the sidewalk.
Right.
That's carefully planned.
You know, there's a great picture in the book about that. It showed up twice. Something that was that we all know, we're sure that they could never do this again in San Francisco. I'm sure that, you know, they would never let them do something like this again, especially with the, you know, just the congestion. Well, it would be. I mean, maybe if there was enough money, I don't know. Would you think that it could ever happen?
That's hard to say. I mean, if you look at a great movie from a couple of years ago called Baby Driver.
Yeah.
There's some magnificent stunt driving and crashing in that movie. I don't recall where that was filmed. It was not as big a place as San Francisco, but I mean, yeah, they're spinning and crashing a whole lot of cars and doing some outstanding. That little red Subaru, some outstanding car control and drifting and stuff. So It's possible, but it takes lots of planning. Lots of attorneys and insurance, I imagine, and a lot of dough.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that was the reason why Steve McQueen didn't do a lot of the stunts he did, was the insurance company, or at least covertly, because the insurance companies were going to go, we're not putting our major star on the line, but I don't think he was a man.
Well, can you imagine, you know, the scenes that Bud Eakins drove bouncing down Taylor Street?
Right, yeah.
I mean, if Steve lost the car and killed himself, that's a big problem for a lot of people.
Here you go, Chris. Sure, with Peter Yates, and you can see McQueen, he has a hand gesture that they used, you know, like a racer would use to show pretty much a maneuver.
Right, he has his hand extended out. Yeah.
Again, chalking it out on the sidewalk. The other thing that's in the book, Matt, that's fantastic, is you put the route of San Francisco in the front and back covers.
Amazing.
You can look.
That was kind of fun, huh?
It's like looking at MapQuest, you know, and you can see where each thing is, which is pretty cool. You could go and draw.
Wow. How was it, Matt, seeing that seeing going to San Francisco and seeing the route? How did it make you feel?
Oh, it's fun. It's fun. I have done it before. I have been there before, and I have driven or walked every inch of that route.
Oh, wow.
From the beginning down to the place where it all ends, and the mythical gas station and all that. I have done all of that. And it's really fun. It's really fun because in most cases, the street scenes look a whole lot like they did in 1968.
Really?
I mean, you know, sure, some of the places, the buildings are different, or there's a new building there, or, oh, the Transamerica Tower is now here, or whatever. But in most cases, you know where you are.
Oh, wow.
It's kind of like Dealey Plaza.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know what that looks like.
Sure.
And it's great fun. And if you look in the appendix of the book, there's a little location guide.
Right.
And the idea is, if somebody wants to go take the bullet tour, you can do that. Of course, the chase scene, as you see it, the dots don't exactly connect.
Right.
But you can get to all those places.
Yeah.
And down there on Marina Freeway Drive, or Marina Drive, whatever it is, the Safeway Market that you see in the background, it's still there.
Oh,
it's
that's amazing.
Thing. And Bullet's apartment is still there. And VJ's grocery, where he gets the frozen dinners, is still there. Looks the same. Except I think it has an ATM. But that's about the difference.
It's an ATM.
And there's no newspaper machine. Chris, you can get the Swansons. I tell you what, Matt, we're going to be wrapping in another minute or so. We're at the end of our time. Is there anything you'd like to end with, or any contact information you'd like to put out for people, or how they can find your work, or anything you want to put out there? Now is the time to please share that with us.
Sure, sure. Well, I hope that anybody that reads this story enjoys reading it as much as I enjoy doing it, because it's the car freak film of all time for so many of us. And I hope that you all enjoy it, because I enjoy doing it, and it's a story. It's a great story. I hope I told it well. And if anybody wants to check in on me, please do so. At my website, where you cannot spend any money, by the way. It's just stories and information and updates and pictures and all kinds of stuff. MattStoneCars.com. Please visit my website and check out the stuff that's up there. I have a blog, and there's pictures, and there's book updates, and there's all kinds of stuff. And again, you can't put a credit card in it. I don't want your money from there. But please visit MattStoneCars.com.
Okay, and with that, we have to wrap. For Chris Switzer, Ray Guarino, thanking Matt Stone very much for being our guest today. We are out of here. Chris, what do we say to everybody?
Don't follow us home, and don't lose 7 hubcaps, and don't shift into 10th gear.
All right, Matt, thank you. We'll be back next week with more great radio, and we will see you then. This will be up on the website shortly.
Ciao, Long Island.
All right. So long.
Bye.